Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sport of Kings podcast. On this pod, we discuss the late pick five at Aqueduct on Saturday, December 7th, 2024. This is show number 300, ding, 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 December 6th, 2024. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Sport of Kings, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, how was your Thanksgiving break from the pod, and did you play the races?
It was good. I did play the races. I finally have kind of shaken the flu or whatever I had, a little bit of cough left, but not much. I can't believe we've done 300 Sport of Kings podcasts. That's a lot.
It's a heck of a lot. I think we've been going for 5 years now. That's about, you know,
well,
50,
more than
50 per year.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we're into our sixth year. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's time flies when you're having fun. And yeah, we get to do probably our last trip to New York for the until the spring. But it's a good card, and that Cigar Mile is always an interesting race. So it'll be a good show for number 300.
And we have a special guest. He's a former political science professor. He's an analyst for Naira Bets. He's Matthew DeSantis. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Scott. Really appreciate it. And so excited to join you two and have a nice discussion about a really exciting sequence here on Saturday at Aqueduct.
It is an exciting sequence. But before we get into it, I know for me, because I haven't seen any of your analysis, so I don't know what your background or handicapping methodology is. Maybe for our listeners, you can just tell us what kind of angles you use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tend to be a pretty holistic handicapper in that, you know, I'm not beholden to speed figures alone. I tend to take pace into consideration probably first and foremost. I think, you know, the Timeform US pace projectors or Optics EQ pace projectors are all really helpful tools that I tend to use. So I do tend to be a little bit more of a pace handicapper. I was like, you know, second back off of a layoff or, you know, second off of a surface switch sometimes. I like diving into pedigree for those two-year-old races a lot and looking at damn side precocity. So a lot of different angles, but like I said, I try to take a pretty holistic view where I'm looking at workouts, I'm looking at figures, I'm looking at pace, I'm looking at pedigree. I think that's how you get an overall view of a field, and you can find some things that people who may just rely on one or two methodologies might be able to miss. So I think there's always opportunity for value the more you expand your search in terms of, you know, really diving into different angles when it comes to handicapping races.
All right. Well, thanks for that. And Chris, do you have any questions for Matthew before we get started?
Well, you are, you've been following the New York racing. Is there anything in particular about this time of year running at Aqueduct that, you know, any sort of track biases that are prevalent either typically or right now, near term, or anything like that that would be useful to the listeners?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think this weekend, we're actually quite fortunate. We had a little bit of weather earlier this week, but it's going to be fast conditions. The track looked like it was playing fair today. They're not going to have any weather overnight. So it's going to be a fast track tomorrow. I think a fair track. One thing I will say is, if you don't play Naira very often, the winter at Aqueduct, you can see significant track bias, usually the day after a significant weather event like snow or, you know, rain. And sometimes you can see an inside rail bias. Sometimes on the flip side, it can be a dead rail. So you can see those sorts of biases from day to day. I think it's really important to watch some of those early races to kind of pick up on what might be taking place. But I think tomorrow and this weekend, we've been blessed with some really nice weather for the last couple of months, actually, up here in New York. So no significant biases for this weekend, but just something to keep in mind as we continue on racing over the winter at New York.
Great. Right. Thanks. I think we're ready to go, Scott.
Cool. Well, we're doing the late pick five at Aqueduct on Saturday, and it starts with the sixth race, which is a maiden special weight, 6 furlongs on the dirt, purse of $75,000 for 2-year-old fillies, those born in New York. And Matthew, as our guest, we'd love to have you go first.
Yeah, it's a really interesting race. You know, these 2-year-old New York bred races, it's hard to really feel too confident about singling any horse. You're going too skinny in this particular sequence, or leg of the sequence, I should say. And so I spread a little bit more in this one because I think I can go a little bit skinnier in some of the subsequent legs. But I think you have to start with the morning line favorite, Oklahoma Smoke, for Jorge Abreu. This one doesn't have a lot of dam side precocity. The dam has produced 2 other race foals, 0-for-2 first time out. And Abreu himself is not necessarily a good, very strong first out trainer. But the workout tab speaks for itself. This horse has a series of very strong works going back to October 21st, and as well as a bullet 5-furlong gate work on November 10th. It feels like Abreu knows what he has with this one and maybe purposely worked this one a little slower the last couple of times out. Irad Ortiz Jr. up. So 5-2, I don't like including a favorite when I'm spreading, but I'm only going to go probably 4 deep in this leg. I think the coupled entry of the Linda Rice horses are very intriguing. The number 1, Army Gal, the number 1, A Observer. I actually like the 1A a little bit more of these two with Eric Cancel aboard. Bedside Posse has produced 2 very nice runners, Cupid's Heart and My Man Maddie. And so I think that's something I like to see. Abreu's other horse in this race, number 3, Unwoke at 10-1. That's one I really like. The blinkers are coming on. I think the first time out was a very educational effort. It was off a little bit slow. The blinkers should combat that. I mentioned Abreu's not particularly good first time out, but he's outstanding second time out. Flavian Pratt now up on the mount. Unwoke at 10-1, I think, is an outstanding value and a horse that I'll be including on my ticket. And then the final one is the number 10, Tail of the Tail, 7-2 on the morning line for Rob Atrus. Vekoma, baby. Those Vekomas are winning at an incredibly high rate, 24% first time out for 2-year-olds for this first crop. The dam has produced 2 first out winners as well. Manny Franco up on the mount. The outside post position does concern me a little bit just because young horses tend to break out towards open ground. So I do always worry about losing a little bit of ground early in the race for a horse like this, but the pedigree and the workouts and Atrus's reputation of being very good with 2-year-olds first time out really does give me a little bit of confidence. So I'll kind of go 4 deep in this one with the 1A, 2, 3, and 10.
Okay, a little spready in the first leg, which is understandable because it's a 2-year-old maiden race. Chris, what are you thinking?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so little information to go on. You know, half the field has never raced and the other half hasn't raced much. So these are the kind of races I'm not real excited about typically. I do, you know, the first time starters that Matthew mentioned, I would agree that Oklahoma Smoke is probably the most dangerous. And Abreu actually with 2-year-olds, especially with Irad on board, he doesn't do too bad. But unfortunately, I think that will impact the price. And I wouldn't want to take a short price in this field. So, but of the firsters, that would probably be the one I'm most concerned about. And of the ones that have raced, probably the one I like the most as well is Unwoke. I just am not sure you're going to get 10-1 on him, especially with Flavian Pratt riding. Because I do expect to see him improve quite a bit off that debut effort. So, you know, I would, if you got 10-1, he would be the play for me, but I don't think you'll get that. So I'm going to go for a really big price in here. Assuming Unwoke does take money. And that is the 4 horse Miavana, who I think is kind of an interesting horse in that it debuted way back in June And it went off as the favorite at Churchill in a maiden race. So clearly has some ability, at least the, you know, the connections thought it did in the public. And, you know, it broke quickly and then completely stopped, you know, just completely stopped. So, you know, it didn't earn any kind of a figure, speed figure or anything in the race. But, you know, I think there's a lot of talent there. And then it went off the shelf. So something probably went wrong with the horse. Changed ownerships, and it comes back off a pretty good work tab for Mike Maker. Now it makes its second start, and you know, it could be any kind. I mean, this horse could have a lot of talent, and it's a New York bred, you know, and it debuted at Churchill as a favorite. So I think there's a lot of interesting angles with that horse. It's the kind of horse I like to play in a race like this. Again, my concern is if I'm right, you know, this horse could take money. So, you know, if it goes off at 25-1 or something, I might be a little bit nervous if this one's dead on the board. But, you know, if it gets bet to 8 or 10-1, that's probably a positive sign. Anything lower than that might talk me out of playing just because of the values aspect. But I think Mia Vaughn, a very interesting horse, a four horse. So that's who I'm going to go with as the pod pick.
Okay, Mia Vaughn. Well, it's interesting. A lot of horses have been mentioned, and the two horses that I like have not been mentioned. So the first one is Corain. I'm not 100% sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Corain goes out for Christophe Clement, shows a 48.3 gatework, which I always like, anything under 49. The dam was a turf horse, and most of the siblings are too. But there was a fast dirt horse, Seafoam, a half, who was fast at the age of two. The trainer with two-year-old first-time starters at Aqueduct, 23%, 298 ROI, 8-1 morning line. So I don't, you know, I'm a little worried that it's turfy breeding, but at the same time, all the horses that most of the siblings have been pretty fast, and some on dirt and some on turf. So that's my horse at 8-1. And I would also use Leonora's Secret, who is also a turf bred, but again, Clement has good numbers going second out, turf to dirt. So I like those two, and I'm not sure if I'm going to go any deeper because I'm going to play a kind of a tight pick five today. That's who I got in this race.
Yeah, I think it speaks to just how deep this race is and how many ways you can play it that we basically talked about the entire field for, you know, different ones of us, you know, which we'd prefer. And I think you two both make good points about the Clement horse as well as the Maker horse, Chris. So that was, I do think it's always noteworthy when a New York debuts somewhere else. And you know, sometimes that can speak to some initial expectations that were had or just what this horse might have showed in training at one point. So yeah, definitely interesting. And a tough race to start the sequence for sure.
Yeah, and it's the one where I wouldn't talk people off any horses. That's going to be a price. The one thing I would say about Corain is, to me, it's not as much the turf breeding, but that horse is bred to go long, whether it's going to be on the turf or the dirt. So I think that horse has a future. I just don't think it's sprinting, you know, as a two-year-old. So I my caveat there would be that's a horse I'd like to see when they stretched it out. You know, it might be ready. Maybe it can fire. Like you said, the stats are good for Clement on these two-year-olds, first-time starters.
Yeah, interesting. first-time starters. I guess I already mentioned those numbers. But also interestingly, the first-time starter for the owner, which is a stat I like to check out occasionally. 7-23 with a 221 ROI, but most of those horses were turf horses. So I don't know, either way, you know, I like the 8-1. So that's who I'm rolling with. Okay,
yeah,
let's
tough
go.
Tough race to start the sequence for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We will be able to see the odds. So, you know, at least we don't have to wait until the end of the sequence to find out who they're playing.
Yeah, that is a good point, because sometimes they stick these races at the end in New York. So at least they put it at the beginning of the sequence.
All right. Well, then we'll move to the seventh race, which is our first stakes race. It's the Remsen Grade 2 mile and eighth on dirt, purse of $250,000 for two-year-olds. And Chris, why don't you get us started this time?
Yeah, this one's going to have a heavy favorite, probably deservedly, the 5 Kuwaitin. You know, he's definitely been good in his first two starts, and he's got the right connections. But, you know, it's a big question mark going from a sprint to 9 furlongs. And his last race, he didn't beat much. The runner-up ended up getting drubbed next time out. So, you know, I still think he has something to prove. So, you know, odds on or less, I'm willing to try to beat a horse like that. He certainly could win. He might just run away with it. It's a small field. He's got speed. You know, if they're all the riders grab like they often do in New York, because especially in a race like this where they're going 9 furlongs with two-year-olds and they're reluctant to use them early, you know, he might just gallop around the track. But I'm going to hope that doesn't happen. And I'm going to go with the 4 Studley Do Right in here. To me, he's got some foundation routing. He looks like a router. He runs like a router. He's kind of a grinder. I think he's the kind of horse that's going to be better with added distance. He has some real trips early on in his career. I picked him on the pod one time, and he had a horrible trip that day. And that was the one time he finished off the board in his career, was when I picked him on the pod. But I think he's had excuses in those early races, and he really has been meant to go longer. You know, 9-2 is not super good value, but it's okay. And if they really pound Kuwaitin and one or two others in here, maybe he floats up above that price, and he'd definitely be playable. So I'm going to go with the 4. Studley Do Right, who, if those of you are old like me and used to watch Rocky and Bullwinkle on Saturday mornings when that was the thing to do, they used to have Dudley Do Right on there. Well, I'm sure this is named after. He was in a Canadian Mountie, like the super good guy, and he had this villain Snidely Whiplash, who was the bad guy. And so Kuwaitin is the Snidely Whiplash for Studley Do Right here, and hopefully he can foil him and end up in the winner's circle.
Yes, Studley Do Right, 1-for-1 at Aqueduct. Matthew, what do you got?
Yeah, I see this pretty similarly. I also am playing against Kuwaitin for the reasons that Chris mentioned, and I just think that this horse has some things to prove. I'm also not convinced that this pedigree necessarily is going to be the best going two turns. Instagram is still a relatively unproven sire, though I should say some of his offspring in this first crop have managed to get the routing distance, but I think those were all one-turn miles. So we'll see. The dam side pedigree is almost all sprinting. So I do wonder whether or not he's ultimately a miler at the end of the day. Maybe he's just a little bit of a precocious two-year-old that's able to get the distance, but I'm going to play against him. And yeah, Studley Do Right is kind of a logical alternative. I've been a big fan of this horse for a while. He is a big physical specimen when you see him in the paddock. I've been able to see him a couple of times up at Saratoga, and he just really impresses you just how filled out he is and how physically big he is for a two-year-old. And so he's built like a two-turn horse. You have Nyquist influence up top out of a Curlin mare. I mean, there's a lot to like there to suggest this horse is going to absolutely appreciate going long. Second time blinkers as well. That was, I think, a really big step in the Nashua last time out. This horse sat a little bit closer to the pace early. Admittedly, it was a short field, but still sat only about 2 lengths off. I think that allowed for that grinding style to be more effective, as opposed to sitting 7, 8, 9 lengths back and really relying on a hot pace to kind of fall apart. I think now he can put himself in that pace. That 86 buyer speed figure last time out is certainly comparable if he's able to take another step forward. So he makes a lot of sense. And then the other horse that I do like, and I'll be going too deep in this leg, is Tux, the number 1 horse for trainer Bill Mott. This one debuted last time out, won very impressively, admittedly over a short field. But I, again, like the influence of Tappet up top. You have the Munnings influence underneath for a little bit of speed early. I think Junior with the inside rail is going to want to get this horse away. The horse showed good speed in debut, and I think, you know, can challenge Key Wading a little bit up front. And maybe that sets things up even better for Studley Do-Right if that happens. But I think Tux is a real shot. And I'll say Bill Mott on dirt graded stakes races for two-year-olds over the last 5 years is winning at a 28% clip. So he knows how to get these two-year-olds ready for these types of races. And two of those victories over the last 5 years were going sprints to routes. So again, not amazing value in terms of 3-1 and 9-2, but as you mentioned, a relatively short field. I think really only five major players in this one. So the fact that you can get a horse like 9-2 for Studley Do-Right, I actually think is outstanding value in this race. So like I said, too deep for me and trying to beat the favorite here.
All right. Well, it looks like Studley Do-Right is a triple barreled pod pick. We're all three on the horse. He's always been fast. He has the breeding to get the distance. The dam being by Curlin and the winner of a two-term turf stakes race. he showed professionalism with those blinkers the first time. Had an inside trip, and it didn't faze him. And I think he should be able to wear these horses down. And I'm also too deep with you, Matthew. I'm also using Tux, who won handily and extended on the gallop out.
Yeah, you know, Tux is the wild card in here. I'm just a little reluctant to go with a horse that has had one start, which was just a perfect trip, maiden win, sprinting, you know, going 9 furlongs on its second start, especially as probably the strong second choice. So from a betting standpoint, I'm kind of against Tux, but certainly his, you know, from an ability standpoint and a chance of winning, yeah, I could see that him winning.
Would you say that race was a little dressed up?
Yeah, there you go. We'll give a little Andy Serling reference here. It was definitely dressed up, I thought. You know, it was a pretty soft pace, and he had a perfect trip. And, you know, it's just to me, he could be any kind, though. You know, this race has produced some really good horses in recent years, including last year, that were lightly raced and, you know, showed they could handle the stretch out to 9 furlongs. You know, off sprint prep, but I'm just not gonna. I want a better price on a horse like that. That's all I'm saying. So I'm kind of against him as well. The other horse, if I were going to use a second horse, it would probably be the 3-horse Poster, who's never been on the turf, but really has breeding that says it. I mean, on the dirt, started on the turf. It's breeding. It says there's no reason why it couldn't reproduce its turf form on dirt. And the Godolphin horses, you know, they just win for everybody. And even Owen Hardy's become a stakes winning trainer with these Godolphin horses. He's had them for a long time, but in recent years, just these, they're all running for everybody that trains them. Doesn't matter what country, what continent they run. So, you know, that horse makes me a little bit nervous. And I don't know how they're going to bet it. You know, Flavian Pratt jumps on, which is a really good jock change as well. So, you know, and I think that horse is definitely one that's probably likely to handle the stretch out. So to the 9 furlongs, you know, certainly has a better foundation than some of these others. So that would be the other one I'd be possibly using if I were playing the Big Five.
All right, we'll move to the 8th race. It's another mile and an eighth. It's the Demoiselle Stakes, grade 2, purse of $250,000 for the 2-year-old fillies. And Matthew, your turn to get us started.
Yeah, this one I'm going to follow Florent Giroux is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use Mohima, who is your overwhelming favorite as a single in this leg, 4-5. And admittedly, this horse has had two completely perfect trips. The first two times out has won those two races by a combined 13 lengths. But I think it's notable that Florent Giroux is coming up to ride this horse for the day. I think Flo has maybe one or two other mounts the entire day, but is basically coming up just to ride this horse. Reminds me a little bit of when Manny Franco went down to Keeneland to ride Immersive in her race before the Breeders' Cup, basically saying, like, I don't want to let anybody else get on this horse. This is mine. And it's interesting. Cox has a pair of outstanding two-year-old Kentucky Oaks contenders for next year in terms of Immersive and Good Cheer, who we saw win the Goldenrod last year. But Muhima has good early speed, is stretching out to go two turns. Actually, it's very similar pedigree to the number three poster in terms of a Munnings influence up top and a Tappet influence underneath. So it's interesting to see the similarities between those two in the two races. But, you know, she's got the speed to get in a really nice spot early on in this race. If Giroux wants to go straight to the front, he certainly might be able to. But if not, she can sit that pocket trip on the inside, save all of the ground, and get another kind of ideal setup in front of her. She's done nothing wrong to this point. Admittedly, swallowing 4-5 on a favorite is not something I like to do, but that's why you single it in the spot. You move on. You try to keep your overall ticket down. Obviously, if you're going to try to beat her, the Bill Mott horse makes a little bit of sense. I think Beauty Reign's the number 8. And I even think that the horse like the number 6 plus the Broken is a little bit interesting at 12-1, along with Ballerina Doro at 8-1. Those are horses that I'll probably be including in more in my vertical tickets like exactas and trifectas. But for me, it's the single in this one that's favorite. And then we're moving on hopefully to the next race.
Okay. Muhima could be the lowest price on the day. Chris, what are you thinking?
Yeah, she probably will be. And yeah, to me, she's very similar to the favorite in the last race. Maybe she's been a little more impressive. You know, she comes from a strong barn. But again, she is stretching out for the first time. And this is a much larger field and a lot more horses that want to be up front. So she may not get as soft a trip as Key Waden will get in the previous race. So I am willing to take a shot against her. I will note too, you know, she's not a Godolphin horse, but Godolphin has Shadwell, Darley, Godolphin. They're all the sheikhs from Dubai, and I'm not sure how they decide, you know, what they run under, but I'm sure they're using the same feed. So these horses are just all running out of their skin. Like I said, it doesn't matter if it's Brad Cox, Owen Hardy, you know, Charlie Appleby. They run for all of them. And so I am nervous about that. But it does seem like this, again, because it's 9 furlongs, it's New York, the riders may all grab and nobody goes. But this one could cook up. I'm going to hope for that. And the horse I like, maybe take advantage of that, would be the 3 Fortuna Mia. And, you know, she has had some tough trips. I mean, she won on debut impressively. And then she caught a sloppy track and didn't run that well. And then they changed barns and she had another trouble trip. And their last race, I thought was really good, even though it doesn't look like the result was that great. I mean, in terms of her finish, you know, fourth by, you know, over 7 lengths doesn't sound that great, but she broke alertly and just kept dropping back and dropping back. I don't know what the plan was, but just dropped all the way back to last after breaking near the lead. And at that point, had no chance to win, especially the way the track was playing that day. He's kind of against the track. And then he just tried to circle the field with this big wide move on the turn. And the horse flattened out kind of predictably. But I thought it was a really good effort. And it was also, you know, a route race. So she got a route under her belt, which can't hurt her now going 9 furlongs. So I'm going to go with her. She could get completely overlooked in here. I mean, she hasn't hit the board in her last two starts. So she's 15-1 on the morning line. And, you know, she might even go up above that. I think she's very live long shot. So I will go with the 3 Fortuna Mia.
Okay. You got Mia Vanna and Fortuna Mia. Mama Mia. Anyway, I'm going to go with Liam in the Dust. In her first three races, she contested the pace, and her first race, that was fine. And then she kind of suffered in her second race. And then her third race, she completely spit it up. That was her first try going two turns. But in her last race, she was taught to rate, and she, you know, she closed and she came up the inside and she finished a solid second. And she has the breeding to get the distance. I think that she can turn the tables on Muhima. And I, you know, she's got a little bit more foundation. She's routed. She's gone two turns, even though she sped it up. I think they're prepping her right for this race, and she's my play.
Matthew, jump in.
I think it's an interesting race. If you do try to beat Mohima, I really do think this becomes a very open race. And you know, I think an X factor in this one is, of course, I just briefly mentioned Ballerina Doro on the far outside, the number 10. You mentioned earlier, this is not a short, this is not a small field. This is a 10 horse field. Chad Brown didn't have to supplement this entry. You know, nobody from the racing office was leaning on him to put this horse into the race. This is a horse that has only been ever been on the turf, but the pedigree would suggest that the horse could handle the dirt. The blinkers are coming on from the far outside. Dylan Davis up on the mount. Dylan's had an outstanding summer and now into the fall and winter up here. And this one has a strong closing kick, but you'd imagine those blinkers are going to help this horse maybe be a little bit more forward early. And I just think it's interesting that Chad's putting her in this spot. And like I said, it's a large field. He didn't have to do that. And so it'll be interesting to see how she runs at 8-1. And again, a horse that we mentioned this in the previous race and mentioned it here has run two turns three times now at Saratoga, Kentucky Downs, and Keeneland, going along on the turf each time. So you know the horse has the foundation to do the distance, which is a question mark for some of these other ones who is trying 9 furlongs, excuse me, for the first time.
Well, which is why I think he has her in the race. Not only that, she's really bred to go long, and she has had ridiculously bad trips in all three of her starts. So she's much better than her one win would tell you. And, you know, my big concern with her is the price. I don't know if she's going to be 8-1 because Chad Brown, Dylan Davis, you know, I just don't know. But I would say, you know, she's definitely the other horse I'm interested in. I just have a feeling she'll get bet down below that 8-1. Fortuna Mia could be above a 15-1. So I would have to go with two or three times the price. But, you know, after Fortuna Mia, definitely think if you're trying to beat Mohima and you're playing the pick five, I would put Ballerina Doro in there too, because there's no reason why it doesn't, you know, based on her breeding, that she couldn't handle dirt. And she's certainly one that's definitely kind of demonstrated the ability to get the distance. Question will be, can she get a trip? Can she either handle kickback, which they probably don't want to find out, which means they'll probably keep her outside of horses. So the question is how much ground is she going to have to give up from that post, you know, on round two turns? You know, if he can get her tucked in, you know, drop back and have her not too wide, then that might be, and then she comes rolling late, she can get the job done. I'm just a little bit worried with a closer first time on the dirt, you know, a two-year-old, you don't know how they'll handle those. It's not so much can they handle running on the surface, but can they handle, you know, getting the surface in their face, which for this horse, you know, is a possibility, just depending on what the strategy is. You know, my guess is they might just drop her back far enough where she's out of the kickback and not have to give up too much ground, and then just try to make a wide move on that second turn. And if they do that and she's good enough and the rest of the horses can't get the distance, she could definitely win. But that's definitely a wild card in the race. I'm just a little bit nervous in terms of whether I could expect to get 8-1 on her. But if you did, I wouldn't talk you out of playing that one for sure.
Okay, we'll go to the marquee event. It is the 9th race, the Cigar Mile Handicap. Grade 2, 3-year-olds and up, purse of $500,000. And Chris, your turn to get us started.
Yes, I'm really disappointed. I loved the law professor in here, and he's scratching. So just let the listeners know, I just read a DRF.
No!
They are scratching him, and they're going to run him in 3 weeks in a race where it'll probably be 4-5. And you could have got 20-1 in here. He loves Aqueduct, but I won't spend a lot of time. But I, you know, I love the horse. He's gone, so we got to go. Plan B. And plan B for me, I don't think it's going to be bettable because I don't think this horse is going to be anywhere near his morning line. As much as I respect David Aragona, I don't believe that the number 7 lock will be 9-2. I can't believe Mulliken and Post Time will be a lower price than locked. So in my book, he'll be the betting favorite, and he's deservedly so. I mean, we've talked about the golden pattern on this podcast many times. He's got like the ultimate golden pattern. He was very good 2 year old, probably even better than he probably even ran a better than looked Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where he was kind of against the flow and track, and he still was finishing, you know, fast and ran well. But he was off for a year and missed all the Triple Crown races. But, you know, the typical three-year-old develops a lot over that year, between their two-year-old to the end of the three-year-old year. And so you, assuming he's healthy, and his comeback effort would lead you to believe that it was sort of the perfect comeback. It was, you know, shorter than he wants to go. He's kind of a grinder type, and that, you know, has to get into the race early. And he, you know, he's going 7 furlongs, but it's about as good as you could hope. So second off the layoff, you know, he's almost certain, unless something physically goes wrong, to run the best race of his life. And he doesn't have to improve that much to win in here. So for me, you know, he would be the play at anything near 9-2, but I have a feeling he's going to be closer to 5-2. So I'll make him my pick, but he's probably not a horse I'm going to bet. Unfortunately, the horse I was planning on betting, I won't get that opportunity. So I'll go with the 7.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the price is unlocked, because, you know, Mulliken was the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So it should be interesting. Matthew, what are you thinking?
Yeah, very similar thoughts. Locked is my top choice. I wrote about him on Naira Betts and really like this horse for all the reasons that laid out just a moment ago. And this was a horse that I think we need to remember was a major Kentucky Derby threat leading up to that intended 2024 debut in the Fountain of Youth, and obviously had some setbacks that put him on the bench for a prolonged period of time, but came back, looks so good. And to Chris's point, this is a horse that does need to be ridden. And if you notice that debut race, that comeback race with John Velasquez aboard, he really got after him early to make sure he stays engaged and stays close to the pace. I would imagine Johnny's going to do the same thing here. Important to remember that, of course, Johnny rode Hoist the Gold to victory in the Scar Mile last year. So keeping Locked within just a few lengths of the pace, I think, is going to be really critical here. I would also expect to step forward. If you get anywhere near 9-2, fire away with both hands. But I like others, I'm a little skeptical that we're going to end up getting that price. Mulliken is an interesting horse because he does have the ability to rate. And you mentioned he's attracted money in big spots before. Flavian Pratt remains up for this horse and really fits the Hoist the Gold profile in terms of, you know, can he get a mile? He won at 7 furlongs a couple of times in the Forego and the Nayrud. I just question how good those fields actually were. I don't think he necessarily beat much in those fields. So I don't necessarily hold him in the highest regard. My other horse that I like, and I'm going to be interested to see what the post-time odds are on him if Locke takes a lot of money, is Bookham Dano. In a lot of ways, I think this race reflects what we saw in the Breeders' Cup Classic in terms of the three-year-olds really being the class of this group. Just like we saw Fierceness for Every Young Sierra Leone in the Classic, I think Locked and Bookham Dano as a pair of three-year-olds are really impressive horses. Now, with Bookham Dano, it's the same question as Mulliken. Can he get the mile distance? The first time in the Nashua, he was running against the track. The second time, he lost by a nose to Forever Young in the Saudi Derby. And I'm not going to discount any points for losing Forever Young overseas in that race. So I think he can get the distance. I don't think he can get any more than a mile. He's not a two-turn horse. You got Irad Ortiz Jr. up. He's already a grade one winner with the Woody Stevens. He's always turned in honest efforts. I think if he floats up, if Locke takes money and suddenly Bookham Dano's at 5-1, 6-1, that I think is a really interesting play at that point. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how this race is dominated on the front end and kind of the trips that those two horses that I just outlined end up getting.
Well, I'm really disappointed. I spent so much time on Law Professor. 5-7 at Aqueduct, 3-6 at the distance, blah, 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 blah. And that's all I wrote. And the other horse I was going to use is Locked. So I guess Locked is my pick. for now. I have to re-handicap the race. But I do have some interest in Coastal Mission, who's on a bit of a roll right now. But I'm just going to keep my comments brief because I was really all in on Law Professor, and I wasn't prepared for any backup. So I'll leave it at that. And if you guys have anything else to add, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I'll just jump add, in. You know, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead,
jump,
please.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. I'll jump in after you.
Yeah, I was just going to say on Coastal Mission, he's an interesting horse. I like him a lot. I just did an episode of Capping the Card for Naira Betts YouTube where I gave kind of a top pick and top value play in every race. He was my value play in this race. I had heard some rumblings that Law Professor might be scratching, and I'm a big fan of that horse. And so I was disheartened when I heard some of those rumors, but and sad to hear that it's actually going to be happening. But yeah, Coastal Mission, 12-1, you mentioned on a little bit of a roll, and he's really kind of turned the corner as just a horse that could win at Charlestown. And now you've seen him win at Laurel. You've seen him win at Parks. You've seen him win at Belmont at the Big A. You know, that breakthrough win last time out in the 49er, I think was really impressive. A horse that always brings his lunch pail and makes his effort is really going to sit a nice mid-pack trip, I would imagine. You look at the way he's run the last couple of times out in the Parks Dirt Mile and the 49er. He needs to get a little bit faster in terms of those buyer speed figures if that's what's something you're using. But he's going to sit the right type of trip, I would imagine. And if things get a little too hot up on the front end and horses like Pipeline and Nelson Avenue and Mulliken may not be able to get the mile distance, he should be able to benefit from that and really be able to sit kind of a nice trip. And he's the one horse at a bigger price and a double digit price that I think is really interesting in this field.
Yeah, I'll just talk about a couple of other contenders. First of all, Mulliken, who's the morning line favorite. I hate him. I don't hate the horse, but I hate him as a bet in here. He's the kind of horse I always will bet against. I mean, he's a four-year-old that's made like 10 starts and never been farther than 7 furlongs. You know, I hate playing those kind of horses stretching out for the first time, especially in a good field. And not only that, you know, he kind of peaked with a huge effort in the summer, and then they pointed to the Breeders' Cup. And he ran okay in there. But I mean, to me, if there's ever an over the top horse who's high weight, by the way, he's given like 5 or 6 pounds to horses like Locked. And, you know, he's an absolute toss for me. So I wouldn't bet a nickel on that horse, especially at the likely price. So, you know, I would strongly recommend do not bet on Mulliken in this race. He's a terrible bet. Bookham Dano, kind of in a similar vein, but, you know, he has run decent one-turn miles before. You know, they were good efforts. I do think it's kind of at the limit of his best. You know, I think he is probably better going shorter. So I'm always reluctant to take a short price on a horse that's probably not doing what it does best. And, you know, and he doesn't have numbers that lay over the field or anything. So I would be against him, but not like he's a complete toss like Mulliken. But, you know, I would have to he'd have to float up well above his 4-1 morning line for me to be interested in him. And then the other two favorites, Post Time is a horse I've always liked. You know, and I thought he ran really well in the shipping all the way to the West Coast in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. If he had won that race, I would have made a lot of money. he didn't. He ran very well, but he was second best to Full Serrano, who just freaked that day, unfortunately. But I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. But at a short price, I don't want him in here. And, you know, his rider never inspires confidence in me. And he picks up weight. You know, he's a co-high weight with Mulliken. So from a betting perspective, I wouldn't be surprised if he won. Certainly good enough to win. And he may get a setup because there could be a hot pace in here. But, you know, he's not a good bet. And then last, the horse I'll mention, sorry I'm talking so much, but I just want to hit all the main contenders. The 9 Senior Buscador, he's probably the other one I like in here. He was pointed to the Breeders' Cup, but they pointed him to a bunch of mile and a quarter races, and he's just not a mile and a quarter horse. He's just, I think, a one turn horse that has a good closing kick. They said they think a mile is a little bit shorter than he likes, but I think they're wrong. I think his connections just haven't figured this horse out. He's done well at longer distances, but I think a mile 16th, that's his wheelhouse. He could get a setup in here. I didn't think his Breeders' Cup was that great effort was that bad. I think he's kind of rounding into form. I think shortening up is absolutely going to help him. So to me, if you really got 6-1, that there's some value there. So, you know, after locked, he would be the other one I'd be the most inclined to use. And he could even be bettable at 6-1 or higher. And I'm not sure how he'll get bet. He seems to get ignored all the time. You know, unlike some of the other horses in here, like, you know, locked, one of the reasons I don't think he'll get anything close to 9-2, besides the fact he's obviously good. I mean, he was 2-1 in the Breeders' Cup juvenile. He was 3-5 in the, you know, Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland. He was 2-5 in his last start. I mean, he's 3-5 in another in his maiden win. I mean, this is a horse that gets bet every time. And he might be in a, I don't know if this would be tougher than the Breeders' Cup juvenile. And he's coming in off a huge win. I have a feeling that this is one where David missed, but, you know, and I'd like to hear his rationale. He probably has some reasoning for it, but, you know, I just anticipate the odds that could be quite a bit different than the morning line.
Yeah, I mean, the second, you have the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile second place horse. You've got the favorite from the sprint. I can see his rationale, but I do think he'll be played. And if he's higher than 5-2, I'll be surprised. But I have nothing else to add on that race. Except that I agree with you on Senor Buscador, and you know it does project to be, it's supposed to be a fast pace according to the Timeform U.S. pace projector. So Buscador could run well. Okay, we'll go to the last race of the sequence. It's the 10th, and an allowance, a mile, purse of $92,000 for three-year-olds and up. Matthew, your turn to get us started.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating race. I think there's some interesting horses. Feels like a little bit more of a spready race if you're playing that late pick five. Like I said, probably spread those first legs, spread the last leg. I think you can make some choices and go a little skinnier in the middle. To keep it at an affordable ticket. But I ultimately was really intrigued by the number 5, Heir of Defiance, at 8-1 for trainer Chad Summers. This is a horse that ran against Fierceness in debut as a 2-year-old, finished, you know, 11 and a quarter lengths behind Fierceness, mind you, but then came back next time out of Keeneland and won impressively. And I think that was what also gave a lot of people confidence in Fierceness, that he beat some really nice horses and actually beat a horse like Bilal as well, who came back to run the Remsen and has run it in some nice races since then as well. But yeah, the Heir of Defiance, after that race for Brad Cox back in October of 2023, goes to the bench for nearly a year. Very similar profile to Locked in that regard, in terms of going to the bench for a prolonged period of time and really missing most of that 3-year-old season. Then this horse comes back and, you know, runs in a race at Keeneland, going 7 furlongs, and honestly runs like a horse that needed one off the bench, in all honesty, and, you know, chased the pace a little bit and then faded late, which is what you would expect. The horse now comes out of that race, has had a series of nice 5-furlong works leading up to this one for the new trainer, Chad Summers. We're going a mile this time, but I'm not as worried about the stretch out for this second time off. You're getting 8-1 on the morning line. Whether you get 8-1 or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I think this one presents some interesting value opportunities and is a horse that I'll absolutely be including in my late pick 5 ticket. And as a top pick in this race, like I said, provides a little bit of value in what I think is a very competitive and very spready field.
Heir of Defiance holds the old golden pattern, second off a layoff, a long layoff as a 3-year-old. And well, it's the golden pattern is more for 4-year-olds, but it also applies to 3-year-olds. Chris, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with pretty much everything Matthew said. I will add that last race where he kind of chased the pace and got tired. The winner of that came back and ran 121 time form U.S. figure in a Fairground Stakes next out. So that was a strong field that probably at 7 furlongs is a tough distance to come back off a layoff at onto. So I do agree, kind of needed the race, and he has the golden pattern. The only negative for me is that, you know, he was in Brad Cox barn as a 2-year-old, and he's not in the Brad Cox barn now. And that could be significant. Not saying anything bad about Chad Summers. He's just not Brad Cox, and Brad Cox's horses run unlike most other horses. So, you know, if he's still the same horse as he was a 2-year-old and he's fit now after that, you know, chasing a good horse and getting tired last time out, you know, he could crush the field. But I am nervous about if it was the same trainer, I'd be much more confident he's going to run well. But he wouldn't be 8-1 in the morning line either. You know, he'd probably be 5-2. So, you know, you're getting compensated if that price holds up. I'm still not sure that price will hold up here again. I'm just always a skeptic when there's a horse I like that's at a price. But you know, he did go off at 5-2 at Keeneland. That was off the layoff. So. You know, I'm not sure he's going to be 8-1, but anything close to that, I would agree. He's the play. So I'm going to double up with Matthew. I think there's lots of other ways you could go in here too, but you know, at 8-1, Air Defiance seems like the play.
Okay. Well, I do have a difference of opinion, but it is related in that the horse that I'm choosing is a Brad Cox horse. And that is the 8 Quick to Accuse. He ran big at a mile at Aqueduct 3 races ago. He's circling back to that effort. If he runs that race, he will demolish this field. He's a half to Mr. Buff, so you have to kind of like his chances to run big. And Brad Cox has hit 7 of his first 15 races this meet. You know, I'm more than happy to go against Mahina, but Quick to Accuse at 4-1. Count me in.
Yeah, it's a really interesting race because I think, you know, even a horse like, you know, Treaty Obligation, I think for Linda Rice is a little bit interesting. This is a horse that feels like a Linda Rice special, trained from, you know, claimed off of Chad Brown, and then immediately moves the horse up to a starter allowance 50. The horse runs really well. Now you get Flavian Pratt up on the mount, which is interesting because Flavian rode this horse for Chad back in the day. So that's one at 8-1 that I think is also an interesting runner. You know, you could look at a horse like Commuted at 7-2, the number 4 horse, Robert Falcone Jr. And that's a gun runner who, you know, I think ran pretty well last time up on the front end, but, you know, faded a little bit late. Maybe the second time you're getting a little bit more conditioning, third back from a little bit of a freshening. Whether you go to a horse like Reynolds Channel, who's your favorite in this race at 3-1, I'm going to be kind of playing against that horse a little bit here, and trying to kind of beat this one in this race. But yeah, Quick to Accuse, I mean, for Brad Cox makes a ton of sense. And Brad Cox and Manny Franco, I, quite frankly, just flat betting those two at Aqueduct this winter is probably a pretty winning strategy from a gambling standpoint. Cox winning 47% of his entries at Aqueduct to this point. So it's really hard. And I believe he's 14 for 15 hitting the board at this point. So it is hard to bet against those Brad Cox runners when they come up here. And when you see Manny on one of those, that means it's the number one. And it is usually a really hard horse to get around in those spots.
Yeah, I think that's the horse to beat. And I think it's going to be the favorite. I don't, again, I'm kind of beating up on David this. And he's really good at the morning line, but yeah, I how could Brad Cox horse that looks good on paper not be the favorite in this race? I don't quite understand the logic on that. You just said the numbers. He wins like half races he enters, right? And this one figures. So I just can't believe you're going to be the third choice at 4-1 in here.
Well, hey, you know, but I think. I do want to add something. We were baffled that David Aragona made Mulliken the 8-5 favorite in the Saratoga race, the 7 furlong, whatever that race was in August. And guess what? He went off at 8-5. So
yeah.
So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
All right. Well, I don't trust it. I think Quick to Accuse is going to be the favorite. I'll be surprised if you get 4-1, you should be betting on that horse for sure. I don't think you will get it. So I'll just have to part ways with David on that one and some of the others on this card. The one horse that none of you mentioned.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think one really is a reflection of how difficult some of these races are. I mean, how even some of these fields are when you have large fields. And I think there's some, you know, there's not a big difference necessarily between 3-1, 7-2, 4-1, 9-2. I think you could slot a couple of those horses in there. And I think as a result, you're going to see some movement. And it's going to be really interesting, but I think it's a reflection of just how, you know, close this field could be or how people could look at this and come to a couple of different conclusions. But yeah, there's definitely been times where I'm, you know, handicapping ahead of time and I go, there's no way this horse is this price. And then son of a gun, they're loading them into the gate and that's the price the horse is. And I sometimes have to text David and I go, oh, you got me on that one. So you never know what the betting public's going to end up doing in some of these spots.
Yeah, well, he's definitely the best morning line maker. That's why I always hesitate to question. But, you know, I still have to go with my own judgment on these. And we'll see. You know, my guess is I'll probably be right on a few and he'll be right on a few. So, you know, that's the way it goes.
Exactly.
But I was going to mention one other horse in here that hadn't got mentioned, and that's the 10 horse Night Effect. This horse doesn't have sexy connections, but, you know, to me, it's really solid horse that fits. It's the kind of horse that can kind of maybe get undervalued in a race like this, where there's a lot of ways to go. And this horse in good form, his best races fit, and there's no reason why it couldn't win with the right trip. So, you know, to me, this could be a race that really cooks up. And if it does, that probably will hurt this horse. But again, you never know how these riders are going to ride races like this. So to me, the 10 Night Effect is one that might float up above that 10-1, which is already a pretty good price. And, you know, he wouldn't be impossible in here at that. So there's a little value there.
Timeform US does have this as a fast pace and it has Night Effect in second. I was feeling spready when I initially looked at this race. And in fact, I have 7 horses as uses, but I've decided that I'm just going to single Quick to Accuse and, you know, not worry about losing a lot of money on the pick 5 by singling him and just using a few others in each leg. I'll be able to do a pick 5 for under $50.
Yeah, it's always good if you can get a horse that you do like and you can single it in a spread leg. You know, that's always a good strategy from a betting standpoint in the picks. So I wouldn't talk you out of that approach at all.
Yeah, I completely agreed. I think so many times we can be defensive in these types of spread legs. But if you have an opinion you really care about, if you have an opinion you feel strongly about, I always tell people push your chips in on that opinion. That's where you can be different from everybody else. You can set your ticket apart from other people's, is, you know, being able to then put together a really affordable ticket and, you know, be able to really potentially cash in on a big ticket as a result. So definitely think that, you know, going single in those races where otherwise you might want to spread is obviously a sound betting strategy. And again, it just comes down to what your opinion is from a handicapping perspective. And then from a betting perspective too, and understanding, listen, if this is a really spready race, I'm not going to include, you know, the top choice as well, because if I end up catching chalk, then, you know, now I'm just unnecessarily increasing the price of the thorough. So always a lot of fun to, you know, talk about betting strategy with these sequences. And I think this one is one that you can absolutely put together a very affordable ticket and maybe even a couple of backup tickets too. So it's going to be a fun sequence on Saturday. And I'm just glad we have fast conditions and nice weather for the betting public and for selfishly for me personally, just so I'm not drenched in rain like I was last year.
Yeah. You know, and the horse and Locked, a good example in the prior race too, you know, I think all 3 of us ended up on Locked with Law Professor Scratching. You know, he's one, if you single, you're getting some value there, because that's another race where people might use 4 or 5 horses. So, you know, if you can find that race where everyone else is using 4 or 5 or more and you're singled, you're getting lots of value, even if it's a favorite. Now, if it's like the obvious favorite that everyone's going to play, you're not. But if it's a race like with Locked in the prior race or with Quick to Accuse or the horse that you and I like, Matthew, or Defiance, you know, if you were to single that horse, you know, you really are making the ticket affordable if you're on a budget, but you're also creating some value. So if you cash it, you know, you're actually going to get paid, and you're not without, you know, diluting your payout by an order of, you know, four or five, which many people will do. I mean, if you played like if you were going to play that and you did include Quick to Accuse with four or five other horses, you know, then, you know, to me, that's not a good way to play it. It's kind of the opposite. So the what you're suggesting, I think, is absolutely the right strategy from a betting standpoint.
All right. We're at the time for the segment of best value and most likely winner. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this segment, Matthew, but if you are, we would love to hear your best value and most likely winner. And if you're not, we can go first.
Yeah, I'm happy to go first in terms of best value. It's actually the horse that we were just talking about in the last race. This is Heir of Defiance. That is the horse that at 8-1, I am absolutely thrilled with. If you get anywhere near it, that's the best value. And that's the horse that I'll be using in a lot of different ways and leveraging around in different tickets and just as a lone win bet as well. And I think your most likely winner on the card is going to be Locked in the Cigar Mile.
All right, Chris, where are you at on this?
Well, my best value scratch, so so it's probably not very good value. You know, I'll go with Miavana just because to me that horse is very intriguing, and it's 15-1 on the morning line, and I do think I'll get at least double-digit odds. Some of the other ones I like, I'm not sure I'm going to get the price, so. I'll go with the 4 Miavana as my value, the best value. And as the most likely winner, there's not a horse I'm really confident is going to win. So I'll go with Locked too. I think he's definitely the one most likely to run the race of his life, which is probably good enough to win. But there is enough quality in there that, you know, he could run a good race and lose, but I'll still go with him.
Okay, I'm going to go with Law of Professor was my best value. I was all excited that I had that at the ready before the pot even began. So as a replacement, I'll put Liam in the dust, but I'm not that excited about that horse. And the most likely winner to me is Quick to Accuse, which is if I feel that way, then I should definitely single the horse. And the question is, do you guys have any spot plays elsewhere on the card?
Ooh, that's a good question. I actually like a horse in one of the maiden races earlier on in the card. I actually like this Bill Mott horse, Nolita, the number 9 in race 5. This is a horse that is getting the blinkers on and is shortening up from running a mile. This horse has some good races to run back to last summer and then even this summer. And then the last two times haven't been great, but that corresponded with stretching out to a mile. I think the blinkers on, cutting back to 6 furlongs, Junior remains up on the mount. 10-1 on the morning line. That's a spot play I definitely am interested in using.
Great. Nolita in the 5th. Chris, do you have any spot plays?
Well, the other race I took a look at was the 4th, the other stakes race at Aqueduct. I wouldn't say this is a great play, but the 7 horse Ain't Broke hasn't as her best races win, I think. And the big question is, she's coming off a long layoff. Is she going to be ready for Linda Rice off the bench? You know, but if she does fire, I think, is it a she? Are these she's or he's? I'm not even sure. It's a she.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think she's, you know, real interesting off the layoff, but she's only 5-1 in the morning line. So from a value standpoint, it's not great, But that was the only other race I looked at on the card. So not a, a heavy endorsement, but the 7-8 broke was the one I was a little interested in.
Okay. In a rare event, I have a spot play. And that is in also in the fourth, and it is the 2 Stonewall Star. Her last 4 races have either been on turf or she has had trouble at the start. She shows a big number as a young 3-year-old, so has the capacity to run a big one. She's 12-1 morning line, I think can go higher. And, you know, it's interesting when it comes to naming horses, you know, how do you go about naming them? Well, this horse is a homebred by Barry Schwartz, and he owns a farm called Stonewall Farm in near Yorktown, New York, which is where I used to live. And it's a tremendous farm. I mean, you know, just driving by it, it looks opulent and it's huge. And you got to figure they had some expectations for this horse by naming her Stonewall Star. So I liked her purely on the numbers, but then when I realized the connections there too, the name connection, this is a horse I'll be playing big time.
The name connection angle. There you go.
The name is the cherry on top.
There you go. There was a horse that had a good name. Oh yeah, it was Tux. I think he was by out of a Miracle Dinner Party. And they named him Tux. Yeah. I thought that was a clever name.
That's the one I asked you guys if the horse was last race was dressed up.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick up on that. I was dense. I thought you were you're good call, Scott. That was good. I like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I might feel that for one of my videos tomorrow. So that's a good one.
All right. Well, it's been a great pod. I would like to thank our guest, Matthew DeSantis. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me. Really appreciate it. And a lot of fun talking about that sequence with you guys.
All right. That will conclude show number 300, ding, 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 of the Sword of Kings pod. Good luck at Aqueduct and wherever else you play. And please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
300 cheers.
Giddy up 300 times.